Welcome to Help and Hope, a podcast of CCEF.
Thanks again for joining us this week on Help and Hope. My name is Andrew Ray. This week we have a special podcast. Our two CCEF affiliate offices are being represented. From White River Junction, Vermont, we have Alistair Groves, and from Billings, Montana, we have Aaron Cerrone, and we have our executive director, Tim Lane, with us as well. This week we're going to be discussing sexual misconduct in counseling, and Aaron Cerrone starts off the discussion.
I think what's key, one of the things that I emphasized in yesterday's lecture is the truth that none of us in ministry is protected or shielded from this temptation of entering into a relationship that starts off as my feeding myself off of a person who God has called me to care for in any way, shape, or form. This is many studies have been done where they look back at pastors who have and people in ministry who have entered into sexual relationships with people in their care and their congregations, and look back and say, well, what happened? What kind of personality types led to this? What kind of situational factors led to this? What kind of training or lack thereof contributed to a person's engaging in an exploitive, harmful, destructive relationship with someone there to be caring for? And what do they come up with? Not much.
So it's anybody.
That's right. The goal is to say, well, how do we prevent this from happening? And so what are the people we need to be watching out for? And absolutely, there are people in ministry that are serial perpetrators who are offending and going from one victim to the next. Those type of people do exist. But largely that is not the case for how people slip down into sexual sin with a congregant. So probably most importantly, what I try to communicate up front is that we are all susceptible. And we need to not only take protective and preventative measures, but really understand the underlying dynamics that lead to the destination of crossing those lines into stealing from. This is something that is not ours.
Yes.
And absolutely turning ministry around and feeding on those to whom we are called to feed.
Yeah, the vulnerable that we have power over as we're trying to help. Aaron, I thought one thing you said yesterday that was really helpful to me, you were saying some of these things, and I was tracking right with you in terms of this is everyone is susceptible. This is ultimately comes to heart issues. What are you hungering after? And obviously sexuality is a place where any kind of hunger can get on the table real quick. But you said something yesterday where you were talking about training, just saying like, you know, what impact can training have in helping here? And I kind of thought, as you said that, I was like, man, I don't even know what you're talking about. Why? How is training going to help someone who's willing to overstep those kind of boundaries? And your comment was so helpful in follow-up. You just said, you know, if you have had training where you've been told, look, when someone says, I am so attracted to you, when someone says
– when a counselee
when a counselee says to you as a counselor or you as a pastor, tells you – you're attractive, you make me feel so valued and safe and beautiful where my husband does not or anything like that, that is just a head trip. Anybody's going to have that be a head trip. And if you've got some kind of training where you've had to wrestle through the issue and realize that that person may not mean that as literally as they're saying it, or even just that's coming out of deep troubling in their own heart.
It may not be sexually laden. It's just – I get this positive feeling when I'm with you.
Yeah.
And how do you respond to that? How would you encourage someone to respond to that kind of statement? You know, the one error would be to just soak it up inappropriately.
Sure.
And the other response would be to just kind of shut down and just hammer the person and say, you can't go there. What does it look like to wisely care for someone in that moment, to love them well?
Right. Well, I think the first helpful thought is, this is not about me. This is our temptation as caregivers, as pastors, as counselors, think, wow, I am so caring, I am so wise and so pastoral. And this is where clinical psychologists, let's say, or clinically trained therapists and counselors have an advantage over most people in ministry who don't have training in this area. Someone who is trained clinically expects this. This is part of every counseling relationship, that they expect that their counselee will, in more clinical terms, will project onto them their inner desires, their, call it unconscious, deep needs and fears onto this relationship. And that, for many counselors, is the grist for the counseling mill. And so they're looking for it. They're not taking this personally. This is what counseling is about for them. And so when a counselee says to the psychologist, "I love you, I want to seduce you," and or just idealizes the counselor in any way, shape, or form, the counselor is ready for that and sees it as a normal part of the counseling process and relationship. And so the first, I think, helpful thing to keep in mind is this isn't about me. This person is speaking from some underlying dynamics and deep inner longings and maybe fears that if I take at face value and make this an invitation for personal relationship and deeper personal engagement, could be at best unhelpful and certainly quite destructive for the person who I'm caring for.
So what do you practically say? Someone you're counseling says, I'm attracted to you. I'm drawn to you. I find you warm and welcoming and helpful. And this is going beyond simply, you know, the professional, you know, appropriately moral relationship to something else. How do you respond? How do you treat this person as a real person, bringing real issues to the table, and now you're on the receiving end of all of that?
Right. On one hand, there's a sense that you say that you value and guard the person's integrity and dignity, and don't shame them in those moments of they are being vulnerable. They are communicating something deeply from their hearts, from their souls. And so you walk here cautiously and graciously. But our goal as counselors is to understand, to help them understand what those deep desires are that are turning personal. So, you know, questions like, well, help me understand what's some of these feelings, these attractions that you feel towards me. What is it about our relationship that is so attractive to you, or so comforting to you, or so hopeful to you that your heart longs for? And to help this counselee understand deeper and deeper what's driving it, and once again, not to make it something personal.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I think some of it depends. If the woman's husband is sitting there in the room with you guys as you're talking, it's a very different thing than if she's not. You know, I think you need to be wise about the context of that relationship. I could certainly envision a situation where someone would say something like that, and I would say in my mind, okay, I know this isn't about me, and I see some things that you're wanting from this relationship that, in fact, I can't give. It's almost you want me to play God, and the temptation is that I want me to play God. And so maybe what I'm going to do is just say, hey, you've talked a lot about your sister. I know she lives in the area. You know, maybe she could start coming to these sessions as well. I just think it'd be helpful. It seems like you're trying to find something in this relationship that you need to know right off. I can't give that. I mean, obviously on a sort of ethical level, but even just on a, I'm not what you would like me to be. I can't be that for you. And ultimately, of course, we want you to find your longings answered in Christ. Sure. Not simply anything you long for is going to be found in Christ, but even just then beginning to critique your own longings. Am I even longing for the right things? But practically, if I were going to continue seeing someone who had expressed a significant level of attraction, I would. Thankfully, I've not found myself in a situation very often, but it's...
Well, you're so good-looking, it surprises me.
Well,
I know this isn't about looks, I just said, to throw that in.
I actually sit behind a screen anyway, so that's what I...
Confession.
That's right, it's a confession booth. No, I would probably bring in another person, get them in the room, and I hate to destroy a relationship because of some sort of magic button someone's pressed where they've spoken the word of being drawn to me. But at the same time, it is not worth that person's risk. It is not worth my risk of simply sort of saying, oh, I know I'm big enough to handle this. I'll just forge ahead. And I think Aaron's cautions along those lines just make sense. I want to explore. There's something here, but I want to do that safely for both of us.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's important, too, to realize that sexual misconduct doesn't happen only when there's physical contact.
Right.
You know, it could be as a pastor or a counselor, inappropriate suggestive emails. You know, just things that cross the line where you're expressing some attraction back, or you're receiving it and playing that game. You know, there never is any physical contact, but it's happening in the context of communication, the relationship. You know, I think too. Go ahead,
Tim. Can I just back up that comment a little bit? I think I would even push that line back further, even into beyond communications, to what am I doing in my mind, in my heart,
That's where I was going. I was going to think, you know, do I when I think of a particular person's coming in for counseling, am I starting to find myself, you know, looking forward to it too much? And are the motives behind that looking forward to seeing this person, you know, inappropriate? That, I mean, you're starting from there.
Yeah.
And you may want to even push back further, but...
Absolutely. Just as a personal example, a while back I was working with a woman in midlife who had a great deal of pain and woundedness in her life. And typically, most sessions, she would sit in my office and the tears would pour forth the entire hour that we were together. And session after session after session. And it was in the evening, late in the evening, I was at home with my family. The kids were asleep, and I was just doing some work on my computer. And for whatever reason, I had this mental image, and I saw myself taking my finger and wiping a tear from her eye, just very gently, very tenderly, and it really scared me. And I thought, what is happening here? This is how counselors get into sexual relationships with their counselors. It's not, I mean, it can be a sexual dynamic where a counselor or pastor is has a sexual addiction, and it grows from more of a sexualized fleshly desires. But more typically, and this is why it's so subtle and so surprising, more typically it's a, my heart wants to care for this person, to be the care for this person, and I see myself as able to comfort, to bring comfort, to bring understanding, to be for this person what she needs, and it's those temptations to be the caregiver, capital C, that we start to think about our counselees in inappropriate ways, and to cross lines of caring for them into being for them for our own selfish reasons.
Though I think we will always, in my understanding, has been that always the caregiver says, yes, this went sexual, but it was good for them. I was still trying to do something good for them. It's rarely ever a pure conscious decision of, you know what, I know this is bad for this person, but I want it so much that I'm going to allow this to be sexual. So often it's not that at some point it transfers from being caregiving to being abusive. It's that the whole entire time you are deluding yourself, and it never starts physical. Right. Even the things that go completely sexual, it doesn't start with the physical. It starts with the inner feeding in the heart. It starts with a touch. It starts with just that returning of a certain inappropriate affection. And you have to recognize that even grievous offenders will say, yeah, but it felt like I was doing something good.
I was just trying to help.
You hear that even with not just with sort of adult-to-adult sexual relationships, but those who take advantage of children of either gender. You know, this was something – I felt this was a good thing for them. I was being tender with them in this way. And sexuality is all about tenderness. You know, there's this beautiful truth of the gospel that God is tender with us and he's given us sexuality as an expression of that. Mm. But tenderness – gone wrong is just one of the most devastating evils known to man.
Yeah, that's a good point, Alistair. It's when I was teaching this lecture yesterday, I asked a class basically, how would you, if you were going to seduce a counselee, how would you do it?
I missed that part of the lecture.
You know, and we just sat around, you know, after they got over the initial shock of, what are you talking about? Say, no, seriously, if you were going to sexually seduce a counselee, how would you do it? And 90% of the comments were not sexual. Mm-hmm. For the most part, you realize what we're doing in ministry, in counseling ministry, in pastoral ministry, is deeply caring for people, is deeply is affirming who they are in Christ. It's listening and empathizing with them. It's suffering and grieving along with them, rejoicing with them. It's emotionally intimate, and so as people who are in counseling ministry, this crossing those lines into sexual relationship is a occupational hazard. It's right around the corner.
Let me raise a controversial kind of question.
Oh dear.
You know,
Tim, you're not known to raise controversial questions.
Right. But I know the audience that's listening to this is asking this question.
If they're still listening, we're going along here.
That's all right. Here's the issue: should men or should there be counseling between men and women? Should a woman counsel a man? Should a man counsel a woman? You know, is there a clear biblical, you know, answer to that question? If so, where is it? If not, where does that lead us as we ask questions like this, as we talk about these very serious matters? Because I know all of us have either been in situations like this or we know of situations like this. And certainly our listeners are
asking, you know, that question too.
Yeah.
Well, I'll start out by saying, even if we come down just on a easy answer, no, there should never be cross-gender counseling, I think we more and more as a church just have to be aware that that's not the only way that things can get sexual. You have plenty of people in ministry for whom there is the struggle of same-sex attraction. That's a whole different issue for a different podcast.
But that's good, yeah.
That's something it's not as if we avoid the issue of abusing our power and inappropriate relationships
sex.
By simply limiting it to counseling people who are of the same gender. I personally have not come to some sort of thus saith the Lord kind of answer on that question. I know and respect people who have chosen to go both ways on that. I see wisdom on both sides there. I think if you are going to do it, you need to do that wisely. You can't just sort of say, oh, well, I'm going to do it and go for it. You just want to have some thoughtful ways that you do that are safer for both you and the counselee. And I, as has been obvious from what I've said already, I have chosen to speak with women. I at this point would say I do see that as at least an appropriate option for certain ministry contexts, simply because I think there can be a time when you want to help someone with biblical, compassionate wisdom, and you just may be the best situated person to do that as a man, and then you just really need to understand What are the risks here? What is this person's context? And then you need to be alert to, am I stirring up desires in this person that cannot be righteously satisfied? Am I stirring those up in my own heart? And that's something I seek to watch like a hawk in my own life, and I have others around me who are accountable to hold me accountable, to ask me those kind of hard questions and probe those areas. If I may change at some point, but right now I am open to doing that. I have some very good relationships with women where I feel like there's just a deep honesty, and I believe it's fully appropriate.
Yeah. Aaron, how about you?
Well, I appreciate those who take a stance of I as a man will not counsel a woman unless someone else is in the room. Right. I appreciate their concerns. They're seeing something, and they're with integrity trying to guard themselves against misconduct, against any kind of abuse of the counseling relationship or ministry relationship. They take that seriously, and so many Christians and counselors don't take that seriously and just brush that aside and say, no, that's silly. Mm-hmm. So with that said, in talking about me working with a female counselee, I think oftentimes it's much more beneficial for me as a male to be working with a female counselee in a situation such as where much of the injustices and cruelties that have been metered out on her have come through men. Mm. And so for me, not to refuse to counsel with her, I think would be a real disadvantage in the counseling process and the growth process, and quite possibly me being a man and loving her well, caring for her well, wisely protecting her dignity,
not manipulative,
will actually be a restorative element that God can and does use that. Mm-hmm. In the life of the opposite gender, and to keep that from a counselee, I think would be a shame, would be a loss, and more operating out of a self-protection mode than a caring deeply. How do we best minister to this person?
Yeah. So it seems to be something that we would say is an individual choice, and if you choose not to, you have good reason for doing that. Mm-hmm. You're aware of your own weaknesses and temptations and patterns of sin, and yet there are others like you guys, myself included, that would say, yes, I'm open to that. I'm willing to do it. I have done it, but I set up these guardrails.
That's right.
Of accountability. People involved in my life. Usually, when I'm counseling a woman, I talk a lot about my own marriage, and mention my wife and my kids, and I give this person a context that I'm in a solid and happily married context, and sometimes that can be, for me anyway, I don't know about for the counselee, but for me it can be a reminder that I'm here as a faithful husband and father, and I want to care for you well. And I think the thing that you brought up too about the injustice and women who have experienced that's a very important point. I've been in many situations where the woman has actually come to a point where they express that, and it's very appropriate. It wasn't, you're the first man that's ever cared for me, but it's, you have helped me grow in this area because my history and pattern with men has not been what I've experienced with you. And that has helped me grow in my faith and my belief that God really does care for me and love me. So you're incarnating the love of God as you do that.
Mm-hmm. I want a woman to know that the problem with the men who have wronged her is that they are sinners, not that they are men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Alistair, what prevent it, even as we talk about the possibility of a man working with a woman individually, what are some of the preventive measures and protective measures that you take just practically in the counseling, in your counseling context?
When I am speaking with a woman alone, I try to make sure there's somebody else nearby. Mm-hmm. I would certainly bring in another person into the room in certain situations. And then just in terms of how I guard my own heart, I think that is really where just an exceedingly good accountability network is so important, just mm-hmm. for me in my own personal issues and how those seep into the counseling room. So those would be the immediate off-the-tip-of-my-tongue thoughts. Mm-hmm.
Great. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you for joining us. For more information about CCEF and its resources, visit us on the web at ccef.org.